Welcome to the Hidden Why podcast, episode 1103. My interview with Jodie Wellman discussing her new book, You Only Die Once. Enjoy. Hello, Jodie. Welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. Great to have you here with me today.
Ah, I'm so excited to be here with you.
Yeah. You're over there in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're just a couple of hours apart. Yes.
Yeah. Not too far. I was actually just over there last year, so it was my first experience and I really enjoyed it. So.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So talk to me about meaning and life, and you've got a lot going on and it's very aligned with the Hidden Why podcast. I'm going to mention that you've got a book coming out, You Only Die Once, how to make it to the end without regrets, which I think is really important and really cool for a book title. Mm. And then 4000mondays.com is your website there. Where do we start? Well, let's start with 4000 Mondays.
Oh, all right, let's do it. And thanks for mentioning the book. Yeah, people wonder, and I'm all too happy to explain that it is roughly life math. Like, that is roughly how many Mondays we get at this kick at the can of life. And I am fascinated with the idea of, well, if we can quantify it, and then, in all honesty, do the morbid math. It doesn't have to be morbid. I mean, of course, we have fun with it. It's not morbid and dour. It's motivating. I count how many Mondays I have left, and I want everyone else to count how many Mondays they have left as a way to motivate us to say, well, let's get on with the business of living because time's ticking.
What Monday?
That's the story behind 4,000 Mondays.
No one likes Mondays.
Exactly. It would be all too easy if I said 4,000 Fridays because then we'd all be like, you know what? Life's great. Slam dunk. And I love that. But Mondays are visceral. There's a thing about them, right? Because Mondays remind you it's more salient. Are you liking your life and possibly your career if you're working? Or is this just a slog? Or are you settling or tolerating? Which, of course, we know is no way to live a life you love for long. So it's more of a little bit of, it's more of a wake-up call, you know?
Yeah, I do like it. I think Mondays are important. If you can enjoy a Monday, then you'll enjoy every day even more, won't you?
Well said. Yeah. Well said, yeah.
Mondays still a struggle with me, but I get better at it. Every day I'm getting better. So 4,000, that's interesting. So 4,000 based on what, an average life of 80 years, 70 years, something like that?
Yeah, ish. And so I have a calculator on my website for if you want to be more, you know, literal about it. Because as we know, you know, women tend to live a little longer than men. And so the math is a little more accurate on the resource page on my website. But even if we're being approximate, right? Like I know I've got 1,841 Mondays and I do that math every week. It's easy for me to count it down. And so I'm curious, like for you to do the math and to think about the countdown, does that stir you in any way? What's it like for you to do
the math? When I think about it, I haven't done the math yet, but I think you should do the math, you know. But why do we avoid the idea of dying and death? Oh,
for some reason, I lost. I can't hear.
I can hear you fine there, Jodie. Loud and clear.
Now you're back. Good.
You got me. Yeah.
Yep.
We're having some tech issues there. I can hear you fine.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
So memento mori. Talk to us about. Mm-hmm. This idea, philosophical idea dating way back to the Stoics, I suppose.
Oh, well said. Yeah, it's the Latin phrase that translates to remember we must die. And it is the whole spirit behind 4,000 Mondays and this notion of we need to begin with the end in mind, the really big end, right? Yeah. So it is by actually thinking, wait a minute, I can't just keep prolonging my life and all my dreams and hopes and desires and kick it down the can for later. I am finite, and this is the whole spirit of it. And in research, it's called temporal scarcity, which I love because I like anything. If it's backed up by some research, it feels so much more legit than a feeling and or a philosophy, which is a great start. But the science is clear, and we know this to be true, right? When we see something that we believe is limited time only, that it is not going to be around forever or for long, man, we treat it differently. You know, we have a different sense of value that we associate with it. And that is exactly where logically we know we're dying. This is not news to anybody. It's a crappy reality, right? But when we do a great job of not talking or thinking about it, and I say, let's bring it back into the conversation and obviously the equation of it and the math of it to say, can this be a wake-up call to take your life more seriously and treat it with more urgency? And
or maybe take life less serious. The answer is yes. Seriously.
Well said. You're right. Some of us need to just chill out.
I do. Just that phrase again, memento mori. What is the Latin translation there again?
Yeah, it translates to remember we must die.
Remember we must die. Now, important topic of conversation that I think we need to bring back to the dinner table more often.
Mm. Potentially. Well, I do too.
How did the Stoics bring this into conversation and this idea that death is real, and we all know it's real, but not to avoid it like it's evil or, you know, something really bad. I mean, it is bad, I guess, but.
Yeah, it's this acceptance, and it's whether you're interested in Stoicism or whether you're interested in Buddhism, various philosophies have really embraced the idea that let's get down to reality, that denying it doesn't do us any favors. And even if we bring it to modern day, a lot of existential psychologists are clear that by denying our reality, it actually ironically causes more death anxiety. And so they're having, whether it's the Stoic acceptance or the Buddhist acceptance of saying, you know what? No one ever said it was going to be easy. There's struggle, there's suffering. Let's accept it, and it's incorporated into our life, and not try to just put it aside and wish it wasn't going to happen and hope for the best in the meantime, but weave it into our days so that it is about, it's a healthy respect and a sense of equanimity, really, that, yeah, you know what? I can't cling to all the things I would love to have happen. I mean, I can hope for it and plan for it. But I also accept that the good and the bad are going to happen, including my eventual termination off this planet. And what do I want to do in the meantime? Whether it means, like you said, taking life less seriously or more seriously, but making our intentions actually happen. I'll be honest with you. It's the biggest, saddest sort of crime against our own humanity that I see, which is that we have hopes and dreams and plans. And we either believe that we'll have time later, you know, like when work dies down or when things calm down with the family or when I retire. Well, you know, we also all know the stories where you might not make it there, or you might get there and you're not as fit as you thought you were going to be to, you know, climb the Spanish Steps or do all the things you long to do. And so I really want to make a stand for the life we're living now, that it doesn't have to be grandiose. You know, I want to calibrate here. Like, this isn't about prescribing something that's flashy and sizzly and looks good on social media. Oh, come on. Like, let's just, like, this is for no one else but you. But what is your definition of feeling like you're living a life that you're like, you know what? I did it. Like, at the end, like, I'm kind of proud of the way I showed up, and I lived with vitality. I lived with meaning. And I didn't defer my existence till some later concept. That feels like life well lived.
Right? Yeah. So you think by thinking about death, it'll help us put more good intention into every day and into our life in the whole. With greater intention.
Yeah, and you talked about bringing it to the dinner table, and it's a great point, because a lot of people will say, well, how do I do this? Like, okay, memento mori, it's an idea, but is it a practice? And I say, of course it is. It's about actively counting your Mondays. It's about keeping it aware, like you can't see here, but everywhere I am, there I'm littered with skulls and little tiny little tokens of paraphernalia that remind me of the inevitable end. And a big one is talking about it with friends, having the calm, or family, and family, right? Say, like, even the examples of what do you want to do before you go? And it's like, it's an activated bucket list. I worry about bucket lists. I think that they're lovely in concept, because I love a repository to hold your dreams. Great. But I think what they do, and I'm curious about your opinion on this. What I believe is that sometimes it actually acts as a little bit of a just satisfying enough little check mark where we put it on the list and then we close the book or we close the spreadsheet and then we go ahead and do the you know, some kind of squandering. And by the way, I don't say this with judgment. I am like the chief squanderer. You know, I really know how to waste time in my life. And this is part of the reason why I'm so interested in this, is I have to remind myself to live.
What do you do to waste time?
We're not. Don't get me started. Netflix. Hello.
Okay.
Prime. Hello. I love movies, TV. I love a good dinner at home.
If you enjoy that, is that really a waste of time, though? Like, you know?
Right now, you've just asked one of the best questions ever, because I will say the answer is all relative. So your version of an astonishingly alive life might be different than mine, and now you have to respect introverted homebodies might love that. Here's where the difference is. I know for many of us, we are more comfortable perhaps with a quiet, peaceful, maybe smaller scale existence.
Yeah.
And we know that there's the right dose for us. Like for me, it might be a social thing every, week, but for some people that's not enough. And so I just know I can go many evenings on the couch, and at some point I know I'm disengaging from life, and I'm getting into that like numbing, coping. I'm not really engaging. Whereas I know if maybe once every 2 weeks or so I get up and go out for a nice drink or dinner, or I go to a concert, or I do something that just feels a little more enlivening. That makes me feel more alive and engaged than if I am 25 days in a row on Netflix serving me the next show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like. Yeah.
I agree.
Like, what's your idea? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think sometimes we use it as an excuse because it is comfortable, Sometimes we become complacent in life and give ourselves good reason that, hey, this is what I enjoy doing, even though we may not. And maybe we're not engaging with life as greatly as we'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easy way.
I think we have that sense. It is. And, whether that's that sort of infinite scroll on social media or some kind of a activity that most of us are in tune. Like we know that the right dose is okay to feel like sometimes I don't want to think. I don't want to read after dinner every night. I want to just chill out and watch TV.
Yeah.
But we have that sense. So my question is, if we're all being honest with ourselves, what are the things that if you were to take out a pen and paper and write a list of things that do bring you just maybe small bits of joy that are alternatives to maybe your squandering coping mechanism? And I bet you there are a lot of things. It could be a walk around the block. It could be, going and looking at flowers at a flower store, if that's your thing. It could be reading a brand new kind of book. It could be going out for, a jog with a friend, or it could be trying a new workout. The list is limitless. We're just try one thing.
Doing something different.
Yeah.
If you think we talk about death, that will help us look at those moments more greatly and go, okay, well, is this the best use of my time if I only have 2,000 Mondays left?
Yeah. So that is the motivational intention, right? So for most people, when they are given, and admittedly, like it's a little bit of a poke in the ribs. And because it's an uncomfortable topic, I'm aware that it has more of a wake-up call than any other kind of conversation. And that's the point, is that it is intended to initiate a little bit of the motivational push to say, I want to get on with it. Here's another example. People who have had brushes with death, maybe because they have had a really crappy health diagnosis, but they kind of made it in the clear. Or anyone who, you had a motorcycle accident and it's like, oh, I was just an inch away of losing my life, and you make it through, good for you. Those people are well worth studying because they see things that we don't. They have a greater sharpened kind of sense of what their priorities are. And they're the ones that are interested in saying, oh, I realize with more clarity than ever before that this is limited time only. I'm not going to put off taking those Spanish lessons. I'm not going to put off making up with my mother. I'm not going to put off, fill in the blanks, right? There are a bunch of options for us. So these are the things where I think the more we have to remind ourselves, this is not, we're relaxing into this idea like we will have more time, and we need a little bit of that threat, unfortunately. As humans with psychology, we're more motivated sometimes to avoid pain than seek pleasure. And so if we have to use that kind of unfortunate reality to our advantage, let's use that and say, think about the things you might miss. Think about the regrets you might have on your deathbed. That won't feel very good. Let's avoid those. That's more motivating to many people than just seeking out pure pleasure.
Yeah, 100%. I think any sort of shakeup in life, like major shakeup, will actually help you go, shit, what am I doing? What have I been doing?
Right.
And it will make you focus a bit more, become a bit more intentional. But that can wane too, I think. I've lost someone very close to me recently. I've been through separation, and they've been shakeups definitely for me, and made me look at life differently. But you can fall back into the complacency of life very easily, right? So you've got to keep, bringing this conversation to the table.
Thanks for saying that. I used to do one-on-one coaching for years, and one of my clients came to me, and she recovered from breast cancer. And she was very, very intentional. She was young. She was in her late 30s. She said, I am so concerned because I had this new dawning, new awakening after I was in remission. And I was so intentional about my life and the way I was prioritizing. And I was just abandoning the stupid stuff off to the side. And I was really grateful for life. And she's like, I'm worried because I think I'm starting to see it diminish a little bit, you know, every month. And so she, her point was, she was like, I want Becky 2.0. I want to maintain that spirit of living. And that was exactly the program for her. It was how to maintain that, because we will adapt. You know, that's just the way we're wired. And so research is actually clear. People who have had significant near-death experiences, a vast majority of them still report multiple years later having an impact where they appreciate the sanctity of life, obviously far more so than those mere mortals who've never had to look over the edge per se. But they do need, it is obviously not as strong as it is, you know, the day you get to walk out of the hospital or limp out of the hospital. So, yeah. We need reminders, which is why we're talking about this, right?
Yeah. So when you go out and you know, we're having this conversation and you go, okay, well, guess number one, think about death and what, I guess I asked you the question, what don't you want when you're dead?
What don't you want in terms of reflecting back on your life?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a very severe allergy to the idea of dying with regrets. And in honesty, personally, it stems from my mom dying in her late 50s with a bunch of intentions that she unfortunately didn't take action on. Right. And so I saw the real shame of all sorts of creativity that was just dormant. You know, she didn't get to share it with the world. She didn't get any of the opportunities to, you know, help others or grow or feel that sense of accomplishment and all the benefits that we get from just putting ourselves out there and maybe failing, you know, maybe picking ourselves up and dusting ourselves off, et cetera. And the idea that many of us are walking around with some kind of hope and dream. And they can be really small and they can be really large. Most of us have a nice blending of both.
Yeah.
And the idea that we get to the end and we are have that feeling like those really significant pangs of regret, like, oh, you know, I never wrote that book. I always wanted to. That to me is one of the just that makes me profoundly sad for people.
Yeah.
Some things are trivial, but it all counts. You know, and you get to be the one to decide, let's all relative again, like what your big thing is or what your little thing is. It could be, I don't know, I'll give you a silly one. Like a participant in a workshop that I did last week, she was like, I really want to learn how to make cotton candy. Do you know what cotton candy is?
Yeah.
She's like, I have always loved it. Don't say that. It's fabulous.
Oh my God.
But she, for some reason, she just had a bee in her bonnet about like, I do not want to not make cotton candy in my life. It was because she loves to bake and cook. And so it's a bit of a culinary challenge and it's obviously fabulously. Anyway, for her, it was a thing. She was like, I just want to get this done. And it was like, this is something that's relatively easy, right? Like I need to start a nonprofit that will change the trajectory of the world. No,
it doesn't have to be big.
No.
And I think that's maybe where we sometimes, and I am guilty of this, we make mistakes by looking externally for greater meaning rather than going within. And maybe that takes age or time to understand and develop, or maybe it takes a severe event in your life to realize what's important to you. You know, I sort of look at my life, and this was a reflection I was having recently, because I am one of those people that just can't sit still and want to do all this stuff. And I believe that dying with regret is terrible. I'm right on track with you there. Yet I stop myself from doing a lot of stuff that I really want to do. And then sometimes I want to do all these other things. And I just like, you know what? I don't have to do everything. Why can't I just do the things that I really love? Like, I'm a passionate cook. So who cares if that's what I do in my spare time and that's all I do, you know? And I do, you know? Why do I have to do the gardening and all these other things? Because I find them inspiring, right? But
right, right. Right. Well, you being somebody who clearly you're like a neophile, right? Like you like new things. There's actually a spectrum where you can be neophobic, like, no, don't want anything new. Like that would be my dear dad back in Canada, where, no, I want everything the same as it's always been. Don't mess my ham and cheese sandwich up for lunch. And, you know, then there's you like bring it on with anything.
Yeah.
Your tendency, of course, and like many of us, is might be to like, you're going to have a threshold where you're going to want more newness and novelty, which is good for you, by the way, because most people, that's where we often get into autopilot, is because we're just doing the same thing the same way week after week. And we kind of wonder how, why life is passing us by. It's because we've been routinized, and that's very dangerous. But I would say, you know, back to your idea about having something be a little bit new, shaking it up, not... Like for you, it sounds like you've got the burden of choice because you want to do it all. And I find for folks like you, and I have a touch of what you got, you know, I'm curious and interested in lots. It's that judicious thing, you know, is it causing you more stress to start and not continue with things? And that's then that editing. So I think I believe our lives are just going to be a continuous process of the enrapture of like more starting it and then doing that. Okay. Upon reflection, I'm going to need to probably not continue archery lessons because it doesn't really fit in my life. And I have other things I want to do more. So it's probably always like a divergence convergence. And that to me feels like also like a life well-lived.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as you guess, you know, you don't become, and again, yeah, I am like that. I love change. I love newness, but, and I'll bring it back, but then I'll allow it to grow again. You know? But you can do everything that you want to do, or you can do just a few things and you can find a lot of newness and novelty and learnings in those few things as well. And I think a lot of things in my life anyway, I'm 42 now, have come around in circle, you know, and they then start to meld and intertwine, and it's quite amazing to experience and reflect on how it's all come together.
Yeah. Well, you're reminding me, a lot of my research shows that most people would categorize themselves as in this category called meaningfully bored. And I have these four quadrants. And it's interesting to me because your experience of, you know, probably being interested and fascinated and starting things, you're more of a rarity because more people feel like they'd currently classify their lives as having enough meaning for whatever reason, right? It could be their job or their caregiving at home or whatever they're volunteering or whatever they do in their community, whatever. They have enough meaning to feel good on meaning, but they believe that they're bored. They don't have enough vitality in their life. And that's the spectrum I call like widening your life with vitality. What is vitality? Yeah. I love the definition of it being defined as the positive health of spirit. It's that sense of a positive aliveness that you have that, you know, there's like a zest. It is this enthusiasm for life. It is a sense of like a commitment to participating in life. It's a sense of alive, like literal life breathing. And it doesn't need to be physical. You know, it could be that you feel vitally alive when you read a murder mystery. I don't know, whatever floats your boat.
Yeah.
So it's that sense of, you know, I choose vitality as a descriptor because it's about the pleasure and the fun and all the experiences in life. It's like, again, that example we gave earlier, you could spend every night on the couch. And if that really is your path to vitality, like maybe you're a film critic and a film buff and like that will, nothing could possibly bring you more joy than to be on your couch. Well, you know what? Then like do you.
Yeah.
But for many of us, that idea, many people, the point I'm making is that they're lacking in that sense of vitality, which is that sense of, am I trying new hobbies? Am I getting out and trying that new cocktail bar? Or am I getting out there and feeling like I am vibrantly alive and trying and you know, engaging? Maybe it is something physical with my body, whatever that might be. So people are, and this was true before the pandemic, kind of bored and needing a little more of a spice and sizzle in life.
Zest.
Yeah. Zest.
Yeah, I suppose you can have meaning in life and be content and not feel that level of aliveness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there are trade-offs. I'm always fascinated by the research about how meaning can be really fulfilling in life, but it can often be a trade-off. So for happiness, like traditional vitality, like I've never had kids, but I know many people who have, and child rearing is a deeply meaningful and fulfilling experience that many parents would acknowledge. it's not necessarily a fun time for a lot of years, you know, like they're compromising their vitality in service of something that they've chosen and at the end would say I would do it all over again. At least most would. Yeah. So there are times, you know, same thing with work, you know, where you're like, I'm embarking on a really big soul-filling project. It's so big and it's so meaningful and it's a big challenge and all that deepens your life with meaning. But you may be like, but I know for the next 3 months, I am not coming up for air. I'm not going to be enjoying myself in a traditional way. And that's a great choice you might make for a limited period of time. So there are ways I look at it like, yeah, that's the framework I think that can be helpful for us is defining in any given moment. Am I feeling like my life is wide enough right now with vitality, or do I want to add even more fun stuff and pleasure? And or am I feeling like my life is deep enough right now with meaning and purpose and connection to other people and maybe some spirituality or, you know, good virtues? Do I feel like it's deep? And if not, what might I want to do this week to help get the little checkbox that I did something that felt meaningful? And we can always kind of evaluate our life in that way and always choose to fit one thing into our week that allows us to do that.
Yeah. I think that's where I've made a mistake in the past, where I look at life and I go, just not feeling that vitality. And then I look at the job and I blame the job. You know, I look at something and go, that's the reason why I'm not feeling vitality, rather than accepting my lot and accepting that that is my job and then inserting my own vitality into it, you know? And I think that's where we can all make mistakes, right?
Oh, okay. You're getting me all excited because I do think that there's a bit of a cultural shift in recent decades for work to be a bit of a be all and end all for people, that they work a job you love, you'll never work a day again in your life. Our jobs need to have all the meaning and all the purpose and serve it to us on a platter and be a lot for us. And I am the first to admit, if you're in a job that is robbing you of your soul, stay. I mean, obviously make the change. However, as long as your work is still allowing you to learn and grow and thrive and you can contribute and maybe you've got some friends there, whatever, as long as it's generally net positive on your life, my encouragement is augment your life outside of work, because that's the part you can control the most of. If you're working for someone else, you'll never be able to turn the dials up or down as much as you will want in your work time. So make sure that's not lousy, but do a good job, have fun, and make sure you know that, for example, on a Tuesday night, you're excited because you're going to go to a pottery class, or you're going to try a really new, fantastic meal with Ras El Hanout or whatever, however you pronounce the fabulous spice you're going to put into your dish. You know, So that's the thing, is like, having that little excitement in your stomach and in your head or wherever you feel it in your body about the thing you got going on outside of your work hours, that's an unlimited like fountain of opportunity to feel alive, deep and 100%. Wide, right? It could be fabulously fun, and it could also be really rich and meaningful because you're going to a Bible study class, whatever you want to do, right?
I think that's popular culture, this, you know, finding purpose and meaning, you know, do something you love and you're passionate about. And I talk about it all the time. And I think that's a mistake, you know, and a lot of people have this bad feeling about maybe you and I, because we talk about this idea of finding meaning and purpose in life, but it's not necessarily about, finding a job that you can just do every day, because some people might just say, well, I love Netflix and I'm going to make that my job. Or I like playing games and I'm going to make that my job, whatever it is. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. And I found in my personal experience that by going out there and doing stuff that enlivens me, and I still do this today, something that I got to look forward to today. I play social tennis on Wednesday. It's very exciting. And that fills my life with vitality. That gives me a spirit. Even though I have to still get up and I love my job, don't get me wrong, but there's parts of my job that are mundane and boring I just don't want to do it. But that other vitality that I bring to my life makes my work, all those mundane things, a bit more, you know, high spirit.
Yes, it casts everything in a different light. Because if you're in a dead-end job or just a neutral job that's kind of like work is work, right? And the rest of your life is kind of like fizzled out in a bit of a dead zone. We put inordinate pressure on work, et cetera. But a vitality and meaning outside of work is the tide that lifts all boats. Because all of a sudden, then your attitude towards the work you're doing, there's not as much pressure for it to be everything. And you start to look at it with actually a healthier lens. So Oh, I'm glad we are eye to eye, and let's take back our vitality without it being at work. It's an inside job, and we got to make plans for it in the hours when we're not at work. So
where do you start with people? Like when you're doing a workshop and you bring people in and they're going, yeah, I like this idea of, 4,000 Mondays. I want more purpose and meaning in my life.
Yeah.
How do you start people off in that right direction?
What do you do? Exactly. Okay. So I have sort of five general steps that we may not get through them, but the first one is to diagnose the dead zones. And that is to really do, I have a silly but effective assessment at 68 questions. And it's just to help us to really zero in on where are things feeling alive? Okay, do more of that. And where are things feeling dead? And then you get to pick out of that, is it the domain of life? Is it your health? Is it time to really get back and feeling vibrant again? Or is it your social life or your love life? Or is it your physical or your personal growth or your career, whatever that is? So diagnose. Because was it Peter Drucker that said you can't manage what you can't measure? Let's all take a moment to gag. Very businessy, but it's also appropriate. So diagnosing that is key. Because that's where you know where to put the AED cables. The next thing, of course, I will always say is count your Mondays. You're never going to get away from a conversation with me without counting your Mondays. Because again, we need that perspective. And then it is about thinking and looking at your life and saying, where do you need and or want to widen your life with vitality? And it's a process of brainstorming. It's nothing is too small. Nothing is too big. This is not about an action item yet. It's about what are things that bring you joy, that make you feel like you've got the pleasure, et cetera. And then same thing about the deepening list. What are things that you've always wondered about or that you are doing and you want to do more of? Is it that you want to volunteer at the library? Write it down. Doing the data dump of all the things that would be cool. And this is, it's a start in a workshop of a one, but it's a lifelong project to keep adding and tweaking that list. Yeah. And then what it comes down to is doing the deathbed regret exercise. And we've all done this, but it's really stopping and saying, if tonight was the night, sorry about your luck, but like bon voyage, you're dead. And what would you regret? Of some of the things you've identified that you wanted to do, would it really irk you, for example, that you didn't sell your pottery or that you did whatever. So identify those things. Mm-hmm. And I call them pregrets because I know it sounds kind of silly, but because they're not regrets yet. They're like the step before. So eureka, if you figure it out before you die.
You've got a chance. You can do something about it.
Exactly. Go take the glass blowing class, damn it, if that is the thing that you would regret. So I get all excited about that. So that is one opportunity. And then there's this reflection point about thinking about your legacy. How do you want to be remembered? Some people are motivated by that. Some people actually, research is clear. I love this.
Legacy is
interesting. We're more motivated. Yeah. Oh, golly. I mean, it actually, I'll be honest, it doesn't resonate with me. But I know that it does with so many other people, kind of that idea about what will I leave behind me? And maybe it's because I don't have kids and, my cat will probably
there's a lot of talk on this. I heard someone talking about it recently, about legacy, and I like the idea of legacy myself. I do. And, that's why it motivates me to write a book or speak to people or do something that has impact. And hopefully people remember me, but no one remembers, right? And I was thinking about this last night. And I was talking to myself out loud. I was by myself because my father passed away 2 years ago. And I said, I remember him. But my children will only vaguely remember him through the stories I share. Their children, less and less. No one will remember me, that made me reflect on what's really important.
Thank you for saying that, because that is the exercise. And you're touching on something where you're doing it in the positive sense, which is how do I want to be remembered, and maybe ensure that there are ways through books and videos and recordings of podcasts where you can, maybe someone will come across your archives in 200 years.
Cares? Because I won't know it. So it doesn't really matter, does it?
You won't. Well, that's why all this is quite silly. I mean, at some point, poof, but with legacy, some people are more motivated to avoid leaving a negative legacy than to create a positive one. And it just goes back again to the way we're wired. So there are some exercises I'll do. It's like write a list out of things and ways you want to be described, in your eulogy or at your funeral. And that's lovely. And it can be very instructive. But you know what really grabs us? It's, what do you want people to not say about you? What would make you horrified if there you are lying in your coffin and you could somehow hear people saying, God, he was cheap, or she was so rude, or so, you know, whatever the things are that you just would not want people to say about you. That,
yeah, that's a good one.
Can be very salient, because that's like, oh, how do I not, if people describe me as being a jerk, do I need to change my life and now become kinder and more thoughtful or consider, you know, so that can be a backwards way to get there too. So
you reckon jerks would have that thought?
Pardon me?
You reckon jerks would have that thought? Like seriously, like if you're a jerk, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to go, care. I wish people thought I was less a jerk.
That's true. There are people on the verge of being, there are people on the verge of being jerks.
I
like it. Yeah. Usually they're immune to their jerkiness. And then just to wrap up, like all this stuff is great. Mm. Talking about, the things I might regret or the ideas I have to live wider and deeper. And here is where I'm going to be honest. My pulse starts to increase. I get worried because I want to make sure that we are creating some kind of action plan. Like, and we don't have to boil the ocean. We just don't, it doesn't have to mean that you resign tonight or you break up with your wife tonight or you move to the coast. Like you could do big things if you really need to, that's fine. But for most of us, it's like, what is one little thing that you could do that would actually be a vote of confidence that like I did a thing, you know? So maybe for some people it's, I want to register for tennis too. You know, or I want to go and research what it would take to go back to school for that degree. Or, you know, and again, filling in blanks.
Little things and little steps. And I think we, particularly in this day and age, we overwhelm ourselves with the bigger picture, and the bigger picture is important, but we want to be there rather than here. You know, like putting your shoes next to your bed so you're prompted to go for that walk in the morning. It can be a small thing like that. Putting your shoes on and walking up the driveway and back down. I think we overwhelm ourselves too much with the bigger step rather than just taking that small step. And if we just did this small step, like I said to my mother the other night about this decision, I said, all it is a decision. Because she said, it's overwhelming, it's all too much. And I said, yeah, but it does seem like that. But the first step is making that decision, and that's it. That's the hardest part. If you make that and start, it'll all happen, right?
Okay, so I had a workshop this morning with a group. It was virtual. And we were talking about, the desire to procrastinate our dreams. Yeah. And we used an example of one person wanted to write a poetry book. And it felt like the hugest thing, right? Super intimidating. And, of course, it's laced with fears of failure, rejection, all sorts of fun things. Well, you know what the first thing is? It's like, okay, what would be the easiest thing you could do? And you know what it is? Open up a Word document, file, save as, make the name of it, like my amazing poetry book, and then save it. And now you have a file started. Like the, you know what I mean? Like it can be literally the most minute thing, right? Yeah. It could be literally like in this case, you know, looking up, if you want to do something fun for a date night, look up a really great recipe online. Just start looking at your lunch and plan what, you know, so it's one little step at a time and committing to action. And sometimes we need accountability, which is back to the idea of where we started talking about memento mori and socializing it with people you know. Mm-hmm. Having people that are also kind of motivated by the idea of like, I want to get to the end and feel like I lived my life, and I want to high five myself, and I want to feel like I didn't leave a bunch of my dreams dead on arrival. Then those people are your people to be able to say, hey, did you do the thing you said you were going to do? Like, did you register for the class? Okay, because I did. I registered for my thing, you know, or I did a sketch last night. Did you write a couple stanzas of poetry? Like that accountability can be really helpful.
It's about surrounding. I mean, they talk about a lot, surrounding yourself by the like-minded people, right? And it is so true. And it doesn't have to be your partner that is the one that always prompts you up. It can be a friend. It doesn't have to be a friend. But, you know, you need to have those people in your life. And I certainly feel it. Like I'm quite self-motivated. But I want those other people around me that push into me and say, Leah, love what you're doing, and pump me up, you know? That's just me personally.
Yes.
And if I can have more of those people in my life, it'd be just even better.
Okay, well, listen, think about how everybody who tunes into your podcast gets a dose of that too. Like, this is exactly the spirit of living a life, living like you mean it, living a life worth living, all the things where it's like you get these doses of conversations that make you feel like, yeah, we're in this together. Thank you for this idea and inspiration. So you're doing this already for so many people, which, man, like, isn't that fabulous?
It feels good. You forget it sometimes, but right? And we look at, I haven't achieved this because we're looking at that bigger vision again.
Right.
Rather than going, look at what I've bloody done. You know, 10 years of podcasting, 1,000 people interviewed, whatever it might be. And often we forget to look at the accomplishments or the wins, whether it be that big or even the small wins. I put on my shoes this morning and walked up the driveway. Yeah. And tomorrow that's going to motivate you rather than I walked up the driveway and I didn't bloody walk down the street. What a fucking loser, right? That's the sort of self-talk that we have. Yeah.
Right. I'm a big fan. I call them tiny triumphs. Like, just making notes of the things where, you know what? I'm pretty darn proud that, like I got the kid to school on time today, or that I did stop and spend a minute to brush the cat. Like, whatever those little things are, if you're in a rut, managing the tiny triumphs, I think, is a really great start too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's uplifting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love this conversation, JD.
So do
I, Lee. We'll have to do it again sometime. I reckon we could do it.
All right. Well, hey, we could talk more about regrets, but in the meantime, is there anything that you want to do that you want to kind of maybe sort of kind of be accountable to all of your listeners?
I want to do everything. No, what I'm really focused on right now is having more impact with my positive, motivational, inspirational stuff. I've been doing it on the podcast for quite a while, but I haven't advanced it to another level, right? And I've written a book too, which is called The Ultimate Life Map. And I've been talking a lot about that. And the map's up in front of me right now. I'm bringing that back into action, you know, because it really makes me happy. So I set myself a goal recently to do a motivational talk on social media, which can be stupid and silly. Sometimes it's probably brilliant. I don't know. But more importantly, when I do it, I feel good. Mm-hmm. And this is what you're talking about, vitality, right? So if you can bring anything into your life, it doesn't have to be doing what, and I think this is where a lot of people, again, make mistakes. We go, I like what Lee's doing. I'm going to just do what he does. But if that doesn't sit well with you, if that's not your authentic self-expression, do not do it. I've done it before and it's a waste of time. But you may have to go through that to figure it out.
I agree with you. We have to learn how to sift and sort and edit. But I love your example because it's undeniable, this thing you're describing, your map, your book, this idea you want to bring into the world to a greater extent, it is energizing you. It's making you feel alive. And that is precisely the recipe. You know, like, that is exactly what we all owe ourselves, is what's the thing that makes you feel that sense that you look forward to doing it. And when you do it, it lights you up. And then when you talk about it later, you talk about it with such energy that it's like, whoa, that's a thing for you. Love it. You're doing it.
Yeah. It makes you excited. Okay, and I think we often attach these ideas to an external measurement of, you know, success or fame or money or riches or houses or cars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for all that shit. So I don't attach it to that. And that's okay if you do care for that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But I think if you're attached to that reality, you're going to disappoint yourself more than being attached to the joy that you get from doing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a totally different feeling in the stomach. So for you, you don't tangle together the idea that you're going to bring more out to social media, for example, about the life map, et cetera. It's for you, it's more about, is it the process of doing it, that's your check mark on the feel good? It's like the actual act of the process of doing it.
I don't sit there and look at how many people have clicked, how many people have commented, you know? Okay. And same with my podcast, never have. And at the start, that wasn't the motivation, right? I started the podcast because I thought, oh, these guys are doing podcasts and having quite a big success and making money from them. That's why I started. And then only a few weeks or months into it, it started to evolve and adapt. And I thought, no, that's actually not what it's about. You know, it's about something else. And that's how it can be. You don't have to be Joe Rogan, right? You can run a podcast and talk about a passionate project. And if it brings you joy, great. If it brings you results from that joy, even better. But hey, don't attach yourself to that. I think.
I just want to hear more from you. You know what? We want more. More of your content.
Let's do more. JD, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Final thoughts, how can people reach you?
Oh, thanks for asking. 4000mondays.com, and you can pre-order and order You Only Die Once, How to Make It to the End with No Regrets. And thank you for this scintillating, life-affirming conversation.
It's been awesome. When's that book launch?
May 7th.
May 7th. Oh, good. This podcast will be out well in time for that. So thank you, Jody. Guys, check it out. 4000mondays.com. Stick the link in the show notes at The Hidden Why. And until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard. I hope you love what you're hearing. If you like this episode, guys, or any of the episodes that you're listening to here at The Hidden Why, please do me a favor by sharing it. You can share it with your families. You can share it with your loved ones. You can do that by using your favorite social media channels, using the icons on the platform that you're listening to The Hidden Why podcast. Also, guys, if you're a fan of the show, please connect with me. Connect with me at thehiddenwhy.com. I love to hear from you. I love to converse with the people that listen to this show to find out what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, and perhaps if they have any questions or feedback for the show as well. You can stay up to date with all that I'm releasing here, guys. I do a solo show every Monday, a three-minute thought every Thursday. I do two interviews a week on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and a book review every Friday. You can stay up to date with all that by subscribing to my newsletter at thehiddenwhy.com. Just enter your email address there. And also subscribing to the podcast on the platform that you choose to listen to your podcasts. You can also support the show, guys, by using the Amazon links at thehiddenwhy.com. So if you like books, you can get all the books that I review there, and anything else, really, that you like to purchase through Amazon. So use that link and help support the show. And we've also got a deal with Audible, guys. Audible is a fantastic way to listen to all your favorite books. We've got a deal with them so you can get two free books when you subscribe subscribe to a 30-day free trial. So check that out, again, at thehiddenwhy.com. Guys, that's it from me. You know what to do. Go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, you will discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martinuzzi. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.